Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Third and final hour of tonight's remote broadcast from Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm your host, James Edwards, and it's Saturday evening, September 17th. I know the audio quality tonight is quite as good as you're used to on this program because I'm not at our flagship radio station tonight, broadcasting from AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, although thanks to the Liberty News Radio Network and their great effectiveness in getting our program out to the affiliate stations, including those in Memphis. We are live in Memphis tonight, as we are on all of our stations and on the Internet. I'm just doing it from a hotel room, calling in as if I were a guest on my own show, calling into the studio. And listen, don't ask me how it works. It just works. Not as good. You know, you can tell I'm on a telephone and not on my my super-duper radio microphone at home. But nevertheless, we're doing a show from the road, and it's raw, and it's grainy, and it's real, and we're very happy to be able to bring it to you tonight. We, of course, as you know, as I've been talking about for the entire program tonight, I'm wrapping up a 13-day multi-city speaking tour tonight in Knoxville. I've been home 4 days this month, 4 days out of the first 17 of September. I've been in my own bed. The other 13, I've been on the road talking to some great, great people, including, of course, an epic stop last week in Washington, D.C., where I lectured at the National Press Club. Video of that press conference, by the way, is available at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And tonight, some other stops sandwiched in between. I'll wrap it all up in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'll be heading home tomorrow to sleep in my own bed. Going back to Memphis tomorrow. But I'm in Knoxville tonight. I spoke today at the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar. During the second hour tonight, well, first, let me say, during the first hour, I shared with you a version of my speech, the same speech that I've given at each of these stops this month. That was the first hour, for the benefit of those who haven't been able to join me on the road. And we've met so many great political cesspool fans over the course of the last 2.5 weeks. I've met so many of you in person, shaking your hands, looked into your eye, heard you tell me why you appreciate this show, and folks, I'm a better man for it. I love this audience. You're my family, and without your support, my work wouldn't be possible. You made me a very happy man to be able to do this work. You know, this is what, you know, my life's all about. It never was about making money, God knows. It was about, you know, doing right by my ancestors. And this show is the best way in my mind that I can serve them, and that's what we're doing. But I was here tonight at the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar, just wrapped up a couple of hours ago. During the second hour tonight, you heard from Derek Black, host of the Derek Black Show on AM 1340 WPBR in West Palm Beach, Florida. He was the organizer of this incredibly successful conference. You also heard from former Louisiana representative David Duke, political activist, author. I want to talk a little bit about David. You know, he said some very nice things about me when he was on the show during the latter part of the last hour. And, of course, I feel the same way about him. That goes without saying. But, you know, I understand that we have an audience that grows. Every week, more listeners are coming to know the Political Cesspool Radio program. And that's something that, you know, is very exciting. People say, oh, my goodness, you had David Duke on the show. You know, don't you know he's this. Well, he's not. I know what the media says about David Duke. They say the same things about me. You know what we stand for here and why we fight to advance our positions on the political cesspool. We repeat it every week. We talked about it during the second hour. The reason David Duke is a household name is because he has been more successful than anyone, really, in getting these ideas out there in popular culture. That's why when you hear the name David Duke, if you don't know any better, you think awful things. Because he has been so successful, they have to malign him that much more. If I based my opinion of David Duke off of what I read about him on the Internet by people who hate him to begin with, then I wouldn't want to associate with him. But you know what? I have a mind that works. I'm a free thinker, and what I like to do, I know this is kind of old school, I like to make my own opinion of a person. And so I got to know David Duke about 7 years ago. And the David Duke that I know, the David Duke that is a friend of mine, is the David Duke that you heard here on this radio program tonight. He is a gracious man. He's a kind man. After getting to know him, we became friends. He's been a guest in my home. We've worked together on different conferences. We talk quite a bit off the air, and he's been my guest on the air numerous times over the course of the last 7 years. David Duke is a friend of mine. And, you know, make no mistake about it. You know, we defend people who are pro-white on this show. That's not to say that everybody who claims to be pro-white is a good person. I mean, certainly that's not the case. There are some people, you know, people who maybe would carve a swastika in their forehead and go out and vandalize things and write, you know, silly, obnoxious, profane graffiti and think that they're doing something rebellious and pretending to be pro-white. I mean, these are knuckleheads that we would not want to associate with. You shouldn't either. Not everybody who claims, you know, this cause as their own are friends of ours. But I can tell you that many of the people that are very, very good people. Many of the people that you would read about, and if you allowed the media to form your assessment and opinion of these folks, you would shy away from them. But, you know, I encourage you to use the gift that God gave you. Use your mind. Read what they have to say. Then get to know these people. If you have the opportunity to come and meet people like me and David and some of the others at these conferences, you know, write to us through our website. Buy our books. Read what we have to say. Get to know us the best way you can. And then form your own opinion. And if your own opinion is that, oh, yeah, we're no good, down, low down, dirty, rotten scoundrels, then so be it. But I don't think that's the conclusion that you'll draw. That's certainly not the conclusion that I've drawn from knowing David Duke over the better part of the last decade now. And it's because of my own personal opinion with him that I'm always proud to have him on the show. People say, well, you know, David Duke. Yes, David Duke. I know David Duke. Do his detractors know him? No, they don't know him. They hate what he stands for. They don't know him. They malign him, but they don't know him. They do the same thing to me and anyone else who has been affected. So, you know, again, folks, at the risk of sounding repetitive, use the gift that God gave you. Make your own decision about people. Don't let those who are the true haters make up your mind for you. The good practical advice you could take with you, and that, of course, has been the reason for the event today, Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar. We've been giving people talking points, just good, down-to-earth, old-timey country advice that, you know, really has gotten left behind in today's quote-unquote progressive society. I hope you're enjoying tonight's show. You know, I am really enjoying being able to bring it to you this evening from the road. I am happy, as I was last week from Washington, to be able to bring some of the different personalities that shared the podium with me to the audience tonight. We're going to continue to do that right after this break. Remember, folks, we're in the middle of a fundraising drive. If you're enjoying the show tonight, if you appreciate our work on the festival, we need your support to stay on the air. Go to thepoliticalfestival.org and make a safe and secure contribution this evening.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
About this time every week that I say, my goodness, time is flying by. I can't believe we only have, you know, a couple of segments left in the show this evening. It's even more true tonight. It's even more true because I'm coming to you from Knoxville, Tennessee, having just spoken at the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar, where we're shuttling in guests like Derek Black and David Duke, and now another man who has been making appearances on this show since the very beginning, another good friend of mine, another man who I was very happy to see here today, and he gave an excellent talk, and we're going to have him give a condensed version of that talk here for the radio audience. He is, of course, the Canadian free speech and immigration reform activist, Paul Fromm, a radio man himself. Paul, welcome back to the Political Cesspool.
Well, thank you very much, James. It's great being on your show again.
Well, it's great to have you, for sure. How was dinner? You know, I've asked Derek and David, you know, you got to tell me, how was dinner?
Well, I'll tell you, it was really good. David Duke and I shared a 48-ounce steak together.
I heard about that. He was sharing that with me. I started going into Paul Bunyan mode and exaggerating, and he said, no. 48 ounces. Let's stick with 48. That was still a hunk of meat, though.
And his friends. So I have to say, we did all right.
But you got full. You got full.
Yes.
Well, that's the important thing. Well, anyway, Paul, I'm sure you would agree with me. It was a great day of fellowship and camaraderie. A lot of, you know, hence the name, practical advice was given, and some great talking points were given that people can take with them and apply in their daily lives when they get into discussions and conversations with various acquaintances. And I thought you gave something that really stuck with me. It was very profound. You know, again, a lot of the speeches overlapped one another, which I thought was very good because it reinforced what each person was saying. And so, that being said, what I'm about to say, people have heard us say previously in the show tonight, but we were talking about the fact that, you know, everybody can have pride in their, you know, racial heritage, in their cultural heritage. If they're black and they're proud, well, my goodness, why wouldn't you be? Yes, of course you should be. You're a fine black man. You know, if you're Hispanic, you're Jewish, you're whatever, proud, proud, proud. If you're white, well, not only are you're evil because. And, Paul, you listed a few of the reasons that they throw out why whites should always feel guilty about who they are. But you also provided the intellectual ammunition to combat these arguments. And I'd like for you, no more, no less, because I thought it was perfectly delivered the way you said it in your talk, kind of rebut some of these arguments that they say about white people. You know, white people, you know, practice slavery, so white people are bad and only white people are bad for that. White people raped the environment. We displaced the Indians. We committed the Holocaust. How do you respond to those kind of things?
Well, for in two ways. First of all, just like other races have the right to be proud of their achievements and so on, Europeans or whites could have that right too. In fact, one of the problems is I think our education system is so poor and so rotten, and the media, much of the media, you being an exception as well. There are many European Americans don't know the magnificent history of our people that they have every right to be proud of. America was, in fact, I like to say all of North America, Canada, and the United States, is what it is today because of the work, the sweat, and the creativity of the European founding settler people. You know, the United States and Canada was not built by Africa, it's not built by Asia. It was built by Europeans. Our institutions are European. Our achievements are European. But beyond that, 95% of all the patents ever issued were issued to Europeans or Americans. Technologically, architecturally, music, literature, we have a huge and proud tradition, and I think a lot of people just don't know about it. So that's one side of the equation. The other side is that so a lot of people don't know about their own tradition, so they're not aware that they have a lot to be proud of. But they've also heard an endless litany of negatives, and they get this particular again in the schools and the education system. And you pretty much went over the bill of indictment. That we never did anything good. In fact, all that we ever did as a people were that we enslaved the blacks. We raped the environment, we dispossessed the Native Indians, and we committed the Holocaust against the Jews. Every one of those is, let's say, half a truth. Ugly false or half a truth. Yes, there was slavery in the United States, and but there was all peoples have practiced slavery, and you know, I think we can agree it was a bad institution. But the important thing was that we abolished it. White abolished it for, in the United States, but actually the U.S. was a colony-come lately. Where I come from, it was abolished or outlawed in 1793 by then Governor General Sir Isaac Brock. Britain banned it around before the Napoleonic Wars, and then in the 1830s, it sent its ships out onto the seas to intercept slavers and to suppress it. So, actually, far from feeling guilty about it, we could say, well, our heritage saw the errors of slavery and said no more, and we suppressed it. The other thing that's kind of interesting about slavery is that there were white slaves in the United States as well. So, you know, it was, you might say, an equal opportunity bad practice. But we got rid of it. That's the point. We got rid of it. And slavery is still practiced in the world today, mostly by Arabs and blacks. And there are probably more slaves in the world today than there ever were in colonial times. But we're not doing it. So if anybody should be hanging their heads in shame about slavery, it's on us. So that's number one. The environment, well, yes, it's true. We did some bad things to the environment. You know, hunting the buffalo or bison nearly to extinction, killing the passenger pigeon. We did some bad things. But the fact is, for at least 120 years, there's been quite an environmentalist movement. Much of it originally tied to the anti-immigration movement. We've said, okay, we can't go on polluting our rivers. We can't go on desecrating the land, just clear-cutting forests. We've got to conserve. We've got to protect the land. And so, yes, we made mistakes, but we're doing something about it. You want to see real pollution today, go to places like communist China, where there's almost no standards. They're just pouring raw sewage in the rivers. It's an environmental nightmare. Or Haiti. They've so totally denuded their forests. The environment's another disaster. So those two, you know, allegations are, you know, when you look at the fact, don't hold up. Then there's the allegation that we dispossessed the native people. It's probably not entirely a proud moment in anybody's history, but in many countries, the indigenous population were simply massacred and exterminated. We didn't do that, neither in Canada or the United States. In Canada, there were a lot of treaties, and natives got reservations and land claims. In the United States, there were treaties or reservations. And while it may not have been 100%, there's another fact as well.
Paul, I don't mean to interrupt, my friend. Hold up right there. We're going to come back about the argument that whites are evil and they're always evil because, in number three, we dispossessed the Indians. We're going to talk about that and give you good talking points when we return. Stay tuned.
Okay.
Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this place.
All right, welcome back to the political cesspool, our live broadcast tonight from Knoxville, Tennessee. It's Saturday evening, September 17th. I'm your host, James Edwards. We are sharing with you small sampling of some of the speakers that were there with us today at the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar, sponsored by the Derek Black Show. Paul Fromm is on the line with us now, and I think Paul gave one of the most interesting talks today. You know, again, we were arming people with talking points, practical talking points that they should and could use in, you know, combating some of this anti-white rhetoric that we hear so often. You know, white people were guilty of slavery. Well, maybe we were, but then again, wasn't everyone at some point in history? It was, in fact, whites that ended the practice of slavery around the world, except for in places like Africa, where today it's still ongoing. Whites raped the environment. Well, maybe there were a couple of examples where whites did a little bit more than they should have, but all of the conservation groups, virtually all, if not all, of these environmental advocacy groups were started by white people. And don't think that that runs contrary to your beliefs if you are pro-white. I'm not talking about radical environmentalists who value, you know, plants and trees more than they do people. You know, you can certainly, Paul mentioned today, he's a member of Ducks Unlimited. I mean, certainly we should want to safeguard our natural heritage as well. That's not a liberal issue. These are points that Paul made. He was making a point on the Indians. You're evil white racist because you dispossess the American Indians. Paul, how do you combat that? You were telling him.
Well, in terms of the American Indians, first of all, while there may have been incidents that we may, in retrospect, not be too proud of, through treaty and reservations, provision was made for the previous population, the natives. And, you know, it's a grim warning. North America at one point belonged to what are loosely called the Indian tribes, and they didn't have the numbers or the determination to hold it. We're facing a massive third world invasion of North America, and the same fate will befall us. If we don't have the determination to hold it, somebody else will take over, and they may not treat us too well. Now, there were many countries where the indigenous population were simply massacred. We didn't do that. And there are now far more natives today than there were in colonial times. Furthermore, there's strong historical evidence that there were white people here before the natives. For instance, there's a group of Indians called the Mound people. They build mounds or something almost like pyramids, but they aren't around anymore. They were exterminated before the colonial settlers arrived. So natives were regularly exterminating each other. So I don't think we should be in a position to needlessly beat ourselves up about this. Yes, I think we can admit there were some things that were not done right, but we've done a lot of things right, and we made good on that. The fourth thing that's used as a big whip to beat people with is the so-called Holocaust. And this, to me, is the most bizarre of the guilt attacks. In the case of the other three, there might be at least some superficial, arguable points that people can make. But I won't get into the controversies as to you know, whether 6 million died or exactly what the methods were. That's quite an extensive topic and way beyond the time you have tonight. But let's just take the mainline history, what I call the Hollywood history view, that 6 million died. Why should this be a matter of guilt for Americans or Canadians? We didn't do it. It was not done on our soil. It was not done to Americans or Canadians. And both our countries fought against Nazi Germany, who were the perpetrators of whatever this was, sometimes called the Holocaust. Why should that be a source of guilt for any present-day American? Our countries opposed National Socialist Germany. We certainly didn't commit any act back then. This is almost what some people call sick guilt. It's utterly irrational. It makes no sense at all. And, you know, present-day Canadians or Americans should not be carrying a load of guilt because of whatever happened to the Jews in the Second World War. We didn't do it. In fact, we fought against the people who did whatever was done. So if anything, it would be a source of pride. Hey, we were with the good guys, you might argue. So, but, you know, guilt, James, politically is the same thing as guilt within certain dysfunctional families. It's a tool used to control people. Like, I'm not an amoral person. I'm not saying I should never feel guilty for anything. You know, if I'm careless and I back up and run over your daughter's tricycle and wreck it, then I should feel a bit guilty. I should feel a sense of responsibility. And I say, well, okay, James, I'll buy another tricycle. And that's constructive. Whereas the guilt that's used to manipulate us is not something that any of us had anything personal involvement in. But we're supposed to be feeling guilty and therefore reluctant to take action that would protect ourselves. You know, I mean, some people say, well, look, remember slavery, so therefore we have, or remember what happened to the Native people, so therefore you don't have a right to talk about immigration. Well, just the opposite. We have every right to talk about immigration and to try to protect our own people. So I basically, James, much of my message was that the guilt is used by our enemies to manipulate us, and we've got to be strong-minded and reject it.
Paul Fromm, ladies and gentlemen, he is giving you a quick and succinct recap of the presentation he delivered today to the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar, and these are the kind of things that you need to be using in your arguments and your debates when you talk to people about these issues on the street. And I tell you, we were all better for it today to have heard it live in the ballroom there, and I'm sure you were equally enriched to hear Paul Fromm share with you a slightly condensed version of his talk here on the radio tonight. Paul, I guess you're coming, heading your way back to the hotel now. We'll see you down in the lobby.
Yes, I will, but maybe we could just give people if people would like to contact me, my contact is paul@paulfromm.com. That's email, paul@paulfromm, that's paulfromm.com.
Learn more about Paul Fromm's work by going to that website, and that is, he just spelled it for you. Paul, you know how to spell Paul Fromm, F-R-O-M-M, paulfromm.com, his email, paul@paulfromm.com. You can't
That's
forget
right.
it. And as we did with David Duke earlier, check out their work, form your own conclusions, arrive at your own conclusions with regards to their work, and I think you'll join me in supporting them and calling them a friend. Paul, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out tonight, and
Thanks, James.
We'll see you in a few minutes. Always a pleasure.
You will.
All right, folks. Well, I know we've got a little bit of a delay tonight with me calling into the studio over a phone, so if you're listening in over the Internet, I actually went downstairs to the lobby during the break in between hours. You know, we have that little burst of national news that we play for about 6 minutes at the top of each hour, and I went down there, and there seems to be a 4 or 5 minute delay in the broadcast if you're listening via the Internet tonight. We're having to relay and reroute everything. It's not coming directly from the studio with me calling in from the hotel room tonight. But if you have any questions, by the time this message reaches you, there'll still be some time left in the show. If you have any questions or comments about the Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar that we've been talking about for the bulk of the show this evening, then give us a call before the time runs out this evening, before the sand falls from the hourglass. We have a few more minutes left and one more segment, so I'd like to hear from you. Any questions, comments, or concerns, we'll field a couple. 1-866-986-NEWS is my phone number here on the Liberty News Radio Network. 1-866-986-NEWS. You know, my wife actually joined me on this trip, and she is in my hotel room, and with our baby. You know, we have an 18-month-old, so it wasn't really the best place to do the show tonight. So I hijacked Sam Dixon's room. Sam Dixon's actually been on the show the last 2 weeks. He was one of the poor, unfortunate souls who had to hear my talk in Washington last week, and then hear it again today. I saw him falling asleep. I'm going to ask him about that when he gets here. If he gets here, what time is it? No, I'm just kidding. He didn't really fall asleep. But he was with me in Washington, and he was with me here again today. And Sam was good enough to let me use his room tonight to bring you the show. I hear our music there. That means it's time for another commercial break. When we come back, you're going to hear from one more guest this evening, another great leader in this movement, Kyle Rogers, the webmaster of the Council of Conservative Citizens, editor of the Citizens Informer. We're going to talk a little bit about the Council of Conservative Citizens. No show's complete without that, so stay tuned. We're going to wrap it up right after this.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
And welcome back to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. Final segment tonight from a very high-energy and enthusiastic seminar, Practical Politics and Leadership Seminar. I know we have our correspondent, Peter Scoop Stanton, on the line. We're going to get to him, but first we're going to get to Kyle Rogers. But before we get to Kyle Rogers, I'm going to give you a quick announcement. Keep in mind, I think tonight's show, if I can use the word again, very profound. This is one of the shows that when we do our year in review later on in December, we're going to say, you know what, September 17th in Knoxville, September 10th in Washington, those were two shows that really stood out this year. I think certainly because of where we are and what we're doing and the guests that we've had on tonight, tonight's show is definitely one that we're going to want to remember. It's a show that you're going to want to revisit if you listen to us the whole way through. Perhaps you just caught a portion of the program tonight. Perhaps you're just now tuning in. I want to remind you that our broadcast archive is available at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Now, as you know, we recently changed our broadcast archive, but the most current week's show, that being tonight's show, will be available all the way through next Saturday when our next show comes on the air. It's available free. Very easy to get. All you do is go to our website, go to the archive page, and to get this week's show, just go sometime tomorrow, anytime between tomorrow and next Saturday, and select the hour of your choice. All you got to do is click on the MP3 link positioned to the right of the headphone icon. Again, folks, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Go to the archive. Select the hour of your choice for the tonight's show, September 17th. Click on the link positioned to the right of the headphone. Then you'll be able to hear it just like you always have. No problem. It's still there. We get so many emails from people who haven't been able to figure out the new system. Well, that's where you got to click. That's how you're going to be able to listen to it. And again, folks, this is a show you're going to want to share with your friends and your family, and you're going to revisit for yourself. That's how you get in the archives between now and next Saturday night. Now, we got two more guests to work in the last 7 minutes, so let's get down to it. Good friend of mine here with me, Kyle Rogers, the webmaster of the Council of Conservative Citizens. As I said, the only thing more impressive than the speakers today were the people that were in the audience. And to have leaders like Kyle mingling around, I tell you, kind of shows what kind of the caliber of crowd we have. He's, of course, now the new editor. Got one edition under his belt so far, the Citizens Informer, which is the quarterly publication of the Council of Conservative Citizens. He's a board member of the council. We've been working together for years now. Kyle Rogers, I'm actually shaking the man's hand right now. He's going to give you a quick update on council activities. We've been talking so much tonight about the seminar. Let's talk about another organization that is certainly leading the way for our people, the CFCC. Kyle, it's all yours.
Well, everyone should visit CFCC.org, the greatest website on the Internet, and join the Council of Conservative Citizens, the only membership organization worth joining by far in the entire country. You'll get with your $25 membership, you will get a subscription to the Citizen Informer newspaper. You'll get a free copy of the Frankfurt School DVD. You will get a free copy of our little booklet written by Jesse Helms and Sam Francis on the Martin Luther King holiday sham. And I'd also like to tell everyone that the Sevierville, Tennessee Damons is terrible. Has the worst service I've ever experienced in a restaurant
before. Hey, Kyle is on a roll tonight. I mean, you know it's live, unrehearsed, and uncensored when stuff like that gets propagated on national syndicated airwaves. You know, he's playing to the crowd tonight. You know, we got a couple of Kyle Rogers fans in the room, in Sam Dixon's room tonight. Here they are in the fan club. But Kyle is doing great. Now, the one thing he didn't exaggerate about too much was the council. There might be another organization or two out there worthy of your membership, but the council is definitely at the very top. We're members. We want you to be members. It's a small community. The circle of organizations that are out here fighting to safeguard, protect, and advance the interests of European Americans. And so you've got to support the organizations that we have out there, CSCC.org. Check them out. Join with us, and I think you'll enjoy it. Kyle, do you like the conference today? Yeah, it was good. It was. It was. It was good seeing Kyle there. I wish we had more time. It's really not a great atmosphere to conduct a radio. I'm sitting here with an old rotary handheld telephone here in the hotel. We got to pass it back and forth. It's not really like a microphone. I mean, we've both got mics. We've both got headsets. It's a little different. But, folks, if you were here, you would have met Kyle Rogers. And, listen, speaking of conferences, I've been on the road 13 out of the last 17 days doing talks and stuff, but there are still a couple of more opportunities to meet people like me and Kyle, and one of them is going to be, when, first Saturday? Right, National Board Meeting of the Council. It's open to the public. It's going to be held in... But you got to be a member of the council. So, again, you got to go and, you know, pay your $25 membership fee at cscc.org. Then you can come. And it's going to be in Nashville, Tennessee, first weekend of November. So just kind of plant that in your mind, tuck it away, still a couple of weeks, a couple of months even, before that happens. Well, a month and a half, I guess. Not too long. But we'll continue to talk about it on the website. So if you've missed, you know, all the opportunities to see us over the course of the last week and a half, then you'll want to join us the first week of November in Nashville, CSCC National Board of Directors meeting. Always a highlight of my year. Now, one of the guys who didn't miss an opportunity to see us last week was Political Cesspool's correspondent, Peter Scoop Stanton, who was with me in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club. He had to kind of skedaddle out of there early. Pete, I know we only have a few minutes tonight remaining in the show, but I'd love for you to share with the audience kind of the thoughts that you documented in your email to me after that event. What did you see? What did it mean to you?
Well, first, James, I'd like to let everybody know that's listening that you are a true gentleman. As you know, I've had...
Don't go around impugning me like that, Pete. Don't be spreading those rumors.
Okay, well, here's a rumor that's true. As you know, I've been having some personal issues, and you, despite you being talking to the press club and at the MFA conference, you want to make sure that everything's okay with myself and my family. For that, I say thank you.
You're very welcome.
Despite the fact, you know, you're in the spotlight, instead of saying, all right, see you later, hope everything works out, and, you know, show me the door, you want to make sure everything's okay. Secondly, the movement or the calling or whatever you want to call it, it is literally a family. I was able to meet Jared Taylor, who without him I wouldn't have met you and polluted the airways of the political cesspool. And at this conference, I sat with Jared Taylor, James Edwards, and Sam Dixon. And while Mr. Dixon and Mr. Taylor were busily scribbling notes of the great speakers, Mr. Edwards and I were scribbling juvenile notes about either his lack of a razor or myself in certain states of having a certain feeling on my leg sitting at the table with Mr. Taylor and Mr. Dixon.
Scoop was getting chill bums being in the presence of such manifest magnificence, sharing the table with the... He would include me in that, but I would say at least Jared Taylor and Sam Dixon. We were all sitting at a round table there at the Ronald Reagan building. This was the day after the press club press conference. And, yeah, I think it was great. You know, Pete, you are 100% right on the fact that it really is a family. And I know you were meeting some of these people in person for the first time. Of course, you've been working with our show for off and on for a few years now. And so you're certainly a part of our literal family as far as that goes. But, you know, you don't meet a stranger at meetings like this. That's another thing I want to impress upon people. And I know you walked away from that meeting last week, you know, feeling that full force.
Right. And what's amazing is that I met Jared Taylor. I said, on Friday, I said, James, you got to introduce me to Jared. So I met Jared, and he was, I mean, just more than polite. He was actually... you know, delighted to meet me since, you know, I knew James, and that was amazing. And then I told him about there was a person at the conference Friday that taped the whole thing and then just chopped up the conference. And so for 1 minute, 11 seconds, you just saw Richard Spencer, Jared Taylor, and James Edwards just say the word white over and over and over again.
We put that up on the website, actually. That was probably...
Right. And then the videographer had to do some CGI. It made me look very, my head look very fat and bloated, which I didn't.
Hey, I'm glad you brought that. Well, I mean, I'm not glad you brought that up, but I am glad you mentioned this. Yes. If you go to that parody video, I think we entitled it a post, How the Left Saw Our Press Conference, and you watch that video, at the very end, the camera pans to the left, and you see a man clapping on the front row. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Peter Scoop Stanton, political cesspool correspondent. So, Pete, you shared in that video with us.
Right, and unfortunately, they didn't have me say anything, which was probably a good thing, because at the National Press Club, you and I were speaking. Oh, despite the fact that we haven't seen each other in almost 3 years, we just saw each other. Hey, what's up? And we're like, hey, what's up? That's because of the radio show, emails, text. I mean, Pony Express. I mean, we're just like, you know, almost like roommates. But we had to make sure that we did not use any forced language in front of the mixed crowd. But finally, Thursday here in Washington, there's a big to-do. Ruth Bader Ginsburg was on a plane that caught fire or something, so there's a lot of media out here on Thursday all over the place where I work. So at the place where I work, somebody asked me, like, why is all these TV cameras here? And I said, the reason why all the media was there was because Eddie the Bombardier Miller was traveling through my place of employment.
Oh, man, I wish I could have seen the looks on their face when you said that. Hey, Scoop, you hear the music. You know we're out of time. I wish you could have called in last week. You know, I wanted to have you on for half an hour.
I apologize, but you know what's going on.
We'll get you on next week for the final segment if you can work it. But thank you for calling in tonight and recapping your opinion of last week's meeting. Folks, that's all the time I have tonight from Knoxville. I'm James Edwards on behalf of our entire crew in Utah and our home base in Memphis. Thanks for listening to the Political Festival. We'll see you next week. I'll be home. I'll be in Memphis for the first time since August, back at the studio, and I look forward to talking to you then. Good night, everybody, and God bless.